Okay. I want to talk about owners. I want to hold off on the Boston owners for a while. The owners on the other clubs you played for.
Well, I'll tell you quite honestly, Peter, I didn't know them. Of course, I knew who they were. In Cleveland, it was a fellow that owns the hotel chains. I should know him. Well, let me pass Cleveland. I'll come back. John Fetzer was the owner in Detroit. Although I didn't know John, I knew he was, I knew about him. He was a good honest man. Of course, the Wrigleys owned the Cubs when I was there, and although I never met him, everybody seemed very happy with that affiliation over there too. Vernon Stouffer was the fellow in Cleveland I was thinking of. I did meet Vernon Stouffer. I didn't get any impression from him, as it was at a party, and you know, cocktail party, and hi, Mr. Stouffer, how are you? Thanks for letting me play with your ball club, and thanks for letting your general manager cut me $11,000. But, and of course, in Montreal, we were owned by the Labatt's Brewing Company at the time, so that was sort of an impersonal type of thing. But if you're ready, well, we'll talk about Mr. Yawkey.
Okay.
Mr. Yawkey.
First time I met him, Peter, was in my rookie year, 1962, and when I came off, whenever I pitched, I always had a few beers in my locker put in there, so when I got there, I'd have them, a couple of them open and a couple of them waiting. And I pitched against the Yankees one night in Fenway, and I came in there, and there was this big, heavy-set man sitting in my locker. When you sit in somebody's locker, it's like sitting in their bed with their wife, you know. I say, excuse me, sir, you're in my locker. And he turned around and said, geez, I'm sorry, Dick. Well, it was Mr. Yawkey. I said, gee, Mr. Yawkey, I didn't realize it was you. I said, I'm sorry. He said, no. He said, you're right. This is your locker. He said, let me get my big fat butt out of this chair. And he said, let's have a beer. So Tom Yawkey and I sat there and for about a half hour, 45 minutes. And basically what he said is, Dick, I appreciate what you're doing for my ball club. If there's anything you need that you're not being fulfilled with, please give me a call. I'll be in town till the middle of August. And I appreciate all you're doing for my club, and I'm happy to have my employee and continued success. And anything I can do, I'll be happy to help. So he left me with a awful good impression. Of course, I was in this company a number of times after that, but like so many times, the initial impression you get from a person, Peter, is the one that lasts, and he was a wonderful man.
Okay, some ball players that you might have played against, some impressions. One I grew up idolizing more than anyone else was outfielder for the Twins, first baseman Harmon Killebrew.
Yeah, a classy guy. I had good luck with Harmon. He was the type of guy I made a living against, Peter. Free swinger. Had trouble with a high fastball, where I made a living throwing a high fastball. So I had pretty good luck with Harmon. He had a home run off me. You know, you pitch against a guy long enough that's as strong and as good as he is, he's going to get you. But Harmon and I, to this day, are good friends. And although he's been running some bad illnesses lately, he's doing very well now. And I'm happy to see that, but he's a real class guy and always handled himself as a very real professional athlete.
A legend down in Pittsburgh, Roberto Clemente.
Fortunately, I only pitched against Roberto 8 or 10 times. I could never figure him out. I never knew where to throw the ball on him, inside, outside, whatever. He was almost like Yogi Berra. You know, the farther out of the strike zone I was, the better he hit it. I always felt that he and Yogi, if you threw the ball right down the middle of the plate, you might have the best success with him, but I saw him make plays, Peter. I could talk an hour about him in the outfield. Best pure arm maybe I ever saw. For as far as strength and accuracy and everything involved, he was a great, great outfielder. Very sad day when he went down on New Year's in the plane. And although I never played with Roberto, and I didn't really even know him, it took me a week or two to get over that. I thought that was a big loss, not only for baseball, but for the American public in general.
Mickey Mantle.
Great guy. I mean, a tough, tough competitor. I'll elaborate a little bit on this. I grew up saving Mickey Mantle baseball cards, and although they're all gone now, unfortunately, I made scrapbooks of Mickey Mantle's picture in them. 20 years later, he calls me the toughest pitcher he ever faced, so you can imagine the feeling I have about that. As fierce a competitor as I ever saw, Peter, you could tell his neck would get red at home plate, and he'd grind. You know, they always said his legs were bad, and what could he have done with good legs? I often wonder how bad were his legs, you know, what he did with bad legs. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure he could have done a whole lot better with good ones. He, well, obviously one of the top five ballplayers that ever lived.
The guy out in San Francisco, Willie Mays.
Another guy, oddly enough, that I had great success with, although I didn't play against him that much. I probably pitched against Willie 30 or 40 times, and half of those were in spring training when we used to train in Scottsdale. Willie told me one day, he said, "Big fella," he said, "I will never hit you." He said, "But I'm going to wear out a whole lot of people in between appearances by you." And I sort of laughed at that, but I had good luck with Willie. He was, as far as I'm concerned, Peter, you can talk about Joe DiMaggio, and this is always open for discussion. It's always every barroom in the country said who was the greatest ball player that ever lived. In my estimation, Willie Mays was. I'm not big on stats like you're not either, but you check the statistics, 661 home runs in the ballpark that he played in where the wind blew in from left every day. And his outfield player was second to none. And he seemed to control a game, Peter, when he played in it. Whatever tempo that game took, he usually set it. And I think he was the best ball player that ever lived.
The 1-2 punch in L.A., Don Drysdale and Sandy Koufax.
Well, Sandy Koufax, for 5 years, I don't think the game ever saw anything like him, and maybe never will. When you can retire, I'm sure I got this stat wrong, but I'm close. So when he was 25-6 or whatever it was his last year, they told him he couldn't pitch anymore because he'd lose the use of his arm, and understandably so, he quit. I never saw anything like him, Peter. I had the chance to go up and hit off him three times. I mean, stand there and not hit. And I swear you could hear his curveball break. Hank Aaron put it best. He's just too good for this league. When Hank Aaron says you're too good for the league, that's saying something. Best pitcher I ever saw.
Okay, you just mentioned Hank Aaron. What's your opinion of him?
Hit the ball through the infield harder than any man I ever saw. He had the quickest pair of wrists I've ever seen. Second quickest pair of wrists I ever saw, quite honestly. And that was a fellow that played for us, had a degree of success in both the National and American League. It was Felix Mantilla. Mantilla hit 30 home runs for us 1 year and didn't get up 400 times. But next to Hank, Felix had the wrist, but Hank Aaron had the quickest set of wrists I've ever seen. He hit a home run off me in Atlanta. I feel good about that, really. All the good ones hit home runs off me, but he hit a home run off me on a slider that was low and away after two fastballs high and in. I just threw my hands in the air and I said, "I give." That's why you make $100,000 and I make $30,000, you know.
Someone I forgot to mention that you played with, and you've mentioned him just in the passing a couple times, Carl Yastrzemski.
Yeah, Carl and I, here again, I could talk an hour about Carl. Mostly all good, but there was some bad. I've always been in the opinion, I've told Carl this to his face. I'm not saying anything out of school, but I think Carl first came to the big leagues first in 61. I was still in AAA at that time, but it's the only year we didn't play together in those 8 years. Carl, I think he was under a lot of pressure with the shadow of Williams. But Carl had a tendency to worry so much about his hitting that he wouldn't play in the outfield. In other words, if he go 0-for-8, which he didn't do a whole lot, but when he did, he'd get lazy in the outfield and he concerned himself about not playing defense, but more about his hitting. I think every pitcher, including yours truly, had him up against his locker more than once after games, threatening his life. I think in 67, it all came together. It also happened to be about the time his son Mike was born. I think he matured mentally and physically both in those years. You know, to this day, they said it's the greatest year anybody's ever seen in 67 when he won the Triple Crown and literally carried him to the World Series. From then on, I think he more than deserved the Hall of Fame. A lot of people said, well, he got in on longevity, but you check the stats. They weren't that bad. Carl Yastrzemski was a great ball player.
Two Boston institutions. Never put on a uniform, but you were involved with them directly. Kurt Gowdy and Ned Martin. Any comments on them? They are part of baseball in Boston.
There's no doubt about it. They're both good friends of mine. I always thought, I never told Kurt this, but I would if he was here, but I always thought Kurt was a little bored with broadcasting Boston baseball back in the 60s. Let's face it, we weren't exactly the 27 Yankees. We were always good for 6th, 7th, or 8th place. I think Kurt was a little bored with us in those years, and sometimes I thought he came out in his broadcasting. Great announcer, great talent, good man. A lot of respect for Kurt. Kurt Gowdy always did something that I wanted to do for a living. I thought he had the perfect job when he was the MC or the head of the show, the Outdoorsman or the Great American Outdoors.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I would have loved to have been. But I've said this before, I would have liked to have been Kurt Gowdy, I'll tell you. But I have a lot of respect for Kurt. And of course, Ned Martin and I are very, very close. And Ned's a real classy guy, as is Kurt. Both a lot of class and they handle themselves very, very well. A lot of admiration for both.
Okay, just about done. Comparing when you played back in the early 60s, there were 16 major league teams. If I'm correct, there's 26 now, going to be 28. What differences do you see in the game from when you played and today? Is the talent weaker like they say it is? Are the ball players less motivated because of these long-term contracts they have? What changes have you seen take place? Maybe for the good or for the worse?
Well, I think the changes that I've seen, Peter, mostly are for the worse. I really do. I hate to sound like one of those old ball players to say it was better in our day, but I really believe it was, and it's not for any of the obvious reasons. I can't stand the attitude of some ball players today. I really think it's gotten to the point where the tail is wagging the dog, and that bothers me. I've never been a big, pusher for the owners. I've always looked at the ball players' side or the Players Association. I feel a little bad for them now. I see people, and I don't have to mention any names. I think we all know who they are, and there's a lot of them that come and go as they damn well please around Major League Baseball, and they have one set of rules, and the rest of the players have others. That bothers me. I never thought I'd live to see the day, Peter, when the manager would be by far the lowest paid player on the bench, and I think there's something to be said about that. Back in our day, when we were threatened to stay out after curfew, we got fined $50 or $100. That was a major jolt. What do you fine them now? $100,000? I don't know. My point is, getting back to the real meat and potatoes of your question, I think there's a reason that there's less talent in baseball now, and I think it's Little League Baseball. And I'm a big believer in Little League Baseball. I'm not a big believer in it. I think we've created a monster. I think we start kids way too early. I saw it with my son, who fortunately went on and became a pretty good. He was his college baseball captain and so on. But I think it's a burnout. I think kids, you put a uniform on a kid when he's 6 or 7 years old. I think a lot of ball players, guys that could have been major league stars at 16 or 17, say the hell with this. They've heard it from home. They've heard it from their coaches. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? You struck out with the bases loaded. After 10 years, the kid says, that's enough. Plus the fact when you live in the Northeast like we do, or where I'm from in the Midwest, there's other things like hockey, and there's other things like soccer to do, and other things. And, you know, girls at 16 are looking all better than they ever did now, but I'm being a little facetious. But
no,
what I'm really saying is I think it's a burnout. And I think good kids with talent that could be great ball players don't want to play anymore. And I think that baseball has created a monster, and hence the fact. Rico Petrocelli, who I played with and who's now the manager for the Pawtucket Red Sox, when he was with Birmingham and the White Sox organization a few years back, I asked Rico the same question. I said, Rico, why is the talent not as good? He said, Dick, there's too many guys learning how to play baseball in the big leagues, and it shows. And I believe that. I didn't have a uniform on my back till I was 14. Now, I'm not saying that's the way it should be. I don't think a young man should have a uniform on his back until he's at least 12. Where it becomes, quote-unquote, what we know as organized baseball. But I think it's something we're never going to be able to go back and do anything with. I think we've created something that's, you know, let's face it, if you got a boy or two boys and you live in a block with 20 kids and 19 of them are playing baseball, what's your boy going to do? Sure, he's going to play, and you're going to want him to play. But unfortunately, I see too much burnout 10 years later when good ball players saying, I've had enough.
Okay, the final question is, and again, this is personal for me. Would you be willing to do this again at my school and have it videoed in front of some of my students and possibly send this also to the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Well, I wouldn't be opposed to that. I really wouldn't. My schedule now gets a little busy, just about till the 1st of October, but I'm sure we could find a day somewhere during the summer we could do that. I would not be opposed. Of course, the kids are out of school in the summer, but if not this spring, Peter, certainly in the fall, I'd be happy to try and do it for you.
That'd be great. I really appreciate what you've done. It's a thrill for me, as someone who played baseball in college all the way through high school, to sit down with somebody they grew up watching, admiring, wishing he could emulate him as a left-handed crummy pitcher. this is a thrill, what I'm doing now. The more I do this, the more I enjoy it. I've got cover letters out to 8 or 10 players right now, like I sent to you.
Let me tell you a little story about what you're saying. I know what you're saying. You know, people would tell me that, and I'd say, yeah, sure. I knew they weren't lying. I knew they meant that. And I appreciate what you're saying. But, you know, I just recently, the older I get, I guess the older you get, you start reflecting back. But I can remember back when I was 10, 12, 13 years old, I used to say, I'm Bob Feller. I'm Hal Newhouser. I'm, you know, back in the days when I was young and we had our style, I'm Hank Greenberg or whatever. So I know what you're talking about. And I've had a number of people in the New England area say, gee, I grew up and I used to play in the backyard and tell people, I'm Dick Raddatz. And I'd laugh and I'd say, you know, and I'd half believe them. But the older I get, I remember myself doing that. So I appreciate your words. And I know they come from the heart. And we'll see each other again soon.
Great. Thank you very much.